send it's an opportunity to connect the voice you hear on the radio with the person shaking your hand.
I remember going to one in the 60s when I first became a ham. It was in Long Beach, Long Island. Who knows, it may have been a line mark for all I know, but I just remember it being very heavily attended. They had all this old stuff, and when you say old stuff, you know, that reminds us of our youth. You don't find Arc 5s lying around the ham fest today, but you know, you'll see an old Click 22er or an old Drake. I mean, it's fun to see the old stuff or the holocraft stuff. So I was wondering if that type of stuff would still exist or if that would be popping up at the Limark Ham Fest. You'll see some of the old stuff. It's actually nostalgia for me. So anyway, thanks, Roy. I appreciate it. And for what it's worth, I may show up there. I'll speak to you later. I'll be standing by.
Okay, very good, Sam. Yeah, I mean, if you're really interested in looking at a lot of old gear, especially military gear, the Sussex Hamfest, which usually is in July, I think, would be a great place. They have lots of that equipment. I mean, it's kind of sad. You know, these guys bring all this old boat anchor stuff out of the back of their car. They set it up on the table, and for the most part, a lot of these things just don't sell, so they have to lug it back into the back of the car and drive it home again. There's a lot of microphones, all kinds of stuff, a couple of Drakes, but especially the older stuff, the military-grade equipment, the test equipment from the 50s, which weigh a ton, you're not going to quite get that unless things have changed. The last time I visited the Limark Hamfest, you'll see a couple of things that look like they've been sitting in a guy's garage for the last 40 years. Nothing, at least in my experiences, nothing that kind of made me nostalgic. You wouldn't get Collins. I don't think I've ever seen a Drake. I could have missed it. Or things like that. So there are some odds and ends that people bring from their garages. I wouldn't depend upon it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And actually, this one for Fairlawn. So, I think Limark's on a Saturday, and then Fairlawn, New Jersey, a club 7 days on Sunday. So there's a couple of things popping, which, for the fun of it, might be worthwhile to take a little ride out and see what's going on. Anyway, I'm standing by and listening and enjoying the net, as always.
Okay, Doc. Very good, Sam. I always appreciate your participation in this. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. We're open for business. If anyone would like to put their name down on the list for tonight for questions and topics, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology. Okay, once again, that was all noise. I couldn't pick up any voice whatsoever, so if that's an actual signal, someone was trying to get our attention, consider elevating your antenna, consider raising the watts of output, take your handy-talkie up to a nice little hilly portion of your neighborhood and try again to capture the repeater, because right now you haven't captured it. Okay, Wes, I guess it's your turn now. What do you got for us? down, Wesley.
I come handle DMR and T-Star on the same radio. So, that would be a kind of question to those who play with ICOM, if anybody knows the answer.
Yeah, you can. Are you there, Wesley?
Where's Wesley at?
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, I think we're back. Anyway, getting back to you, Wesley, I don't understand what you sent me. I looked at ICOM. There's absolutely nothing to indicate that the 5200 can handle DMR. Neither, there's, you know, I don't know where that information came from, but I think it's delusional. You can get into DMR, I guess, theoretically, if you go through a hotspot that crossbands, but that's really not what that question means to me. It means, can you hit a couple of buttons on the damn radio and directly go into a talk group, which you can't. As far as I'm aware, ICOM is only licensed to operate D-Star directly. You can get to the other types by going through a hotspot, but that's not the same thing.
Okay, so, yes, you're right, 5200, which is the new radio, not available yet. You can prepay for it. Actually, it's a beautiful one. This one cannot operate with the DMR, but I was able to find that ICOM 705 was set to be specially designed to operate on DMR technology, or it is used for GMR as well. And my question was, is it false information? Is it true? Back to you.
I think it's false information. I went to ICOM's site and I looked up the 705 and there's no entry for DMR. I even used a couple of AIs and I asked it and it said no, it's not. So it's not that I completely believe anything I read on artificial intelligence, but I certainly don't believe anything that I read on unbranded web pages. You know, you could have the earth being flat. So as far as I'm aware, the 705 is not designed for DMR mode radio. It has a digital mode. Its digital mode is D-Star, but it's only D-Star.
Okay, thank you very much for that. The next one is, do you live in a sphere that will fix quantum computers? So on the picture that I sent you, it looks like Helmholtz coil, but it's quadruple Helmholtz coil, and some sort of sphere that is levitating. Actually, that should be one on the top and one on the bottom, too. Not only those four all around. But then, how should we understand the levitating sphere that will fix quantum computers? I was trying to put some information because it looks like companies are they are working on it. They have a working model. It's not only theory. So if you can put some light on it, and with me adding additional information, maybe we would be able to fit some picture. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Do they have a working model? I read nothing to indicate that they have a working model. So far, all I can figure out is someone scribbled something on the back of an envelope and someone in the public relations department published it. Because it's kind of goofy. I mean, it just has to be filled with liquefied helium-3. I'm sure you got a gallon or two of it in the garage. I don't know. It sounds like just some guy at an ad agency had nothing better to do with his time than to promote this product. It doesn't seem to have any indication that it's practical. It's all kind of, at this point, as far as I can figure, theoretical. And once you slop on the concept that you have to submerge the thing in esoteric helium-3, helium-3 is kind of rare on the Earth. Most of the helium is helium-4, so, you know, a bucket of helium-3 is all you need. My guess is they don't have a gram of helium-3 yet, so I don't know what that is, really.
Well, I was kind of puzzled with, what is that levitating sphere? And then when I was digging on it, I found that we start from the definition of qubit. It is a classical computing basic unit information. The classical basic information unit is a bit, which can take certain values. And in quantum computing, the fundamental unit is the qubit. And that would be a short of quantum bit, so that would be bit but quantum bit, which can represent superposition of both. But anyhow, when I was trying to find out about that sphere, I went to complex Hilbert space, and if we go to that, the Hilbert space is a mathematical concept that reflects the competitive complete inner product space, which generalized the idea of Euclidean space, which is Euclidean mathematics, to identify dimensions. And whichever way we should understand that, we coming to a very interesting thing, the Bloch sphere. We remember from Magnet that we still have a blotch boundary. There would be boundary in every magnet between south and north, something in the middle between that. And then we have a blotch sphere, which is the way to represent state of qubit as a point or on the surface of 3D sphere. So it looks like what they're talking about is they're talking about a sphere that has all of the qubits on its surface. Surface of the sphere. And then if you stabilize the sphere, then you stabilize the qubits. if you could put some more light on it, I would appreciate and appreciate.
Okay. You're using very complicated science that fortunately has probably nothing to do with the subject. Unfortunately, there's other things that have to do with the subject that are just as complicated but completely different. It's using helium-3 at something like, you know, 1 degree Kelvin, where it liquefies, and it's a Bosean mass. In that it has no viscosity. You could see YouTubes where they experiment with liquefied helium-3 and have it become this other type phase of matter, in which the liquid will actually go against gravity and go up the side of the beaker and drip down it, and all kinds of strange things. It has no viscosity. It's a very, very weird phase of matter that has nothing really to do with Hilbert space. And it's simply a means to stabilize the movement of your qubits so that they are stable, more of them are stable for a longer period of time. We put these things in cryogenic refrigerants. So you lower the average kinetic energy so that the objects are not moving that much, so that they don't disrupt their state and whether or not they're entangled. So this is simply a method of stabilizing qubits so that they have a longer persistence in the state that you put them in. Because if you didn't, thermal movements would knock them out of alignment, and you couldn't do the quantum computing because it wouldn't last long enough.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. So if I was to think what you say about the real explanation, then I don't understand why did they put for Helmut Kohl on the picture explaining stabilizing sphere. In superconducting environment, you're freezing the electromagnetic field, so you don't need Helmut Kohl. That's my problem with you.
I don't know why they put things there, but at least from the article that I got, I mean, if you don't use the helium-3 at cryogenic temperatures, you could run as many coils as you want. It wouldn't accomplish anything. So whether the coils just act as some kind of stabilizing electromagnetic force within the container, I don't exactly know. But again, there's no Hilbert space understanding required. It's primarily a thermal stabilizer for qubits to get more aligned longer than without this theoretical mechanism. Again, I don't see any proof that they actually built the thing. I think they just kind of ran it through a drafting printing program and ran off a copy of it, and that's, you know, again, because I don't know exactly how much helium-3 liquid you need to run that thing, but, you know, that's probably going to set people back a good amount of money.
Do you have any idea or at least any knowledge why? Is it because of the temperature up here?
Say again, some of your words kind of dropped out.
Okay, I do not understand why helium trees as a requirement, listed as a requirement. Is it because of the temperature or what? If you don't mind to add some more information.
No, it's a different phase of matter with bizarre characteristics, one of which is that helium-3 at a critical temperature loses all viscosity. So it's not going to impart any kind of force on the qubits.
Oh, yeah, I got it now. Thank you very much. The next subject to discuss is... So, if it's not Helms-Coriolis, the four of them making that imaginary sphere or any sphere being suspended in the middle of it, then you should have also one at the top and one at the bottom, not like it is shown in the picture, only at the bottom, because the sphere doesn't have a weight. It's no gravity that is pushing it down. And then the explanation that I found that the qubit is on the surface of the sphere, then if all qubits are on the surface of the sphere and we stabilize a sphere, then we stabilize on all qubits. So that was kind of confusion that I had. But anyhow, the next one is just what? How many batteries would it take to power a human? I sent you another email comparing to, in addition to the one from May 20th, I sent you like an hour ago. If you don't mind to say a few words, back to you.
Well, let me look at my mailbox and see if I have something, because I don't remember that. But then, you know, I was on the radio. I usually don't read emails unless they are obviously important at the time. But let me take a look.
Sounds good. That was like 2 hours ago.
No, I have TechNet if approved, and I have alpha particles. I got another one that says something about the batteries. Let me click on it. Okay, you know, just more on the same subject.
Yeah, so that was Veritasium. Veritasium became a big thing, a business, instead of being just educational video channel, it became a big business. But it is kind of valuable. So Veritasium asked how many batteries would it take to power a human? And from just Veritasium, it says that one AA battery, which is 2.9 watts, makes one worker and going for 2 years. And a bee can fly for 2 days. Mouse uses this energy for 14 hours. Dog for 5.5 minutes. Blue whale for half a second. An average human uses 86 calories per hour, so AA battery would be enough for 2 minutes of human activity. So you need 3.20 AA batteries to keep human activity for 1 hour, and especially for you as a professional in this area, I dedicated it that email so you can comment on it back to you.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I don't know, you're kind of playing with all these things. You're changing the units, which probably is going to help to confuse even more people. Sometimes you say watts, sometimes you say calories. Approximately, the average human being at rest uses up approximately 80 to 100 watts of energy. That's a very kind of generic thing, energy. You can't plug a person in and get anything out because we aren't batteries. We're not really, we're electrochemical devices. We're not just electrical devices. So we primarily use the energy found in chemical bonds. We send nerve signals and motor control signals through electrochemical channels opening and closing. So it's a little bit more esoteric than a battery. You can't, no matter how many batteries you stick into some person, you're not going to get them to come back alive. So it's just a matter of how much energy a resting human being required to maintain homeostasis, you know, basic living. And that's 80 to 100 watts. Now, you want to factor that into batteries? I don't know where that really gets you, because you can't eat a battery. You're not going to get any actual energy from even a fully charged battery if you eat it. So we're just not capable of transforming electrochemical cell battery energy into chemical bonds. So I'm not sure what the point of this is, except to generate a video, which is one of the reasons why Veritasium, I don't think, is going to continue to be a particularly good site to visit. I can already sense that other people are managing it. And I saw a YouTube from someone completely different who was bemoaning the fact that, companies, equity companies, are buying YouTube channels and basically ruining them.
K22RY.
Yes, David?
You know, I was listening to the news the other day, and I heard that there's one very wealthy entrepreneur who he proposed this chip that they put in a human brain to give them superior and superpower. Do you know about this?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's legitimate if it's a true story, or it could be a retelling of good old Elon. Basically robbed a university research lab. He basically hired all of the assistants from this guy who had designed a neural chip and started his own business. And I think a lot of those people quit after a while because they basically killed a bunch of monkeys and killed a bunch of other animals. It still exists. They haven't made any announcement for years. Elon being Elon promised everyone that you'd be able to kind of levitate things with your mind and all kinds of nonsense that there's no indication that you could. It's a very primitive chip that requires brain surgery. There are some people trying to design a method that kind of acts as a skull cap and just couples capacitively, but his chip has to be... You basically have to break open a guy's skull and implant it in the surface of the brain. So there's a high incidence of infection and other problems. So it's another of Elon's nonsense. Again, there are other people working for a non-invasive method, and hopefully they'll be able to do something. The trouble is that it's easier to do by putting it inside your brain than it is on the surface, because then you have a lot of empty space between the two and you can't have accurate energizing of such things. So in the world of science fiction, it's all over the place in the world for people who are just trying to excite and get investment money there's a couple, but does it exist in reality? No.
QSL. Well, you know, there is this spiritual person. He considers himself to be a guru. And as part of his program, you know, he said that he can get young people to be intuitive. Intuitive where, you know, they can read your mind, they can anticipate something to happen, you know. I don't really believe in it. And, you know, I think that it's sort of like a bad magic trick where you can see, you know, the imperfection of it.
Yeah, there used to be a magician called the Incredible Randy, and at one point he spent most of his time demonstrating that spiritualists were phony. And he offered anyone $1 million to do the mind-reading trick. And he never had to give anyone $1 million. So, again, it's a trick. It's a magic trick. Some people are legit about it, and it just entertains you. And others, what was it, Uri Geller, that Israeli guy, who kind of wanted people to think that he could fix watches with his mind. Grifters like him refused to admit that it was just a magic trick when it obviously was. So I don't think much of it.
Well, you know, you can watch television. You could read magazines. You can watch the social media. You can do all kinds of things to get whatever information that you want. And there's a lot of opinions out there. People are giving their opinions. And the intention is, you know, the opinion, they're saying, my opinion is fact. You know, how can they say that an opinion is fact?
By not reading a dictionary.
Well, beyond the dictionary, you know, so many people that want to sell you this and that. So, you know, their opinion is fact. So maybe there's some person out there, some person, who will say, yes, everything that I say is opinion, it's fictional, and it's fantasy, and it's not fact, and I hope that you will like it anyway.
And that's what magicians do all the time. Magicians will never say that you know, this is real. Yeah, the bullet actually went through a person. You know, or I caught the bullet with my hands because they didn't. They palmed the bullet. The bullet never went off any place. And, they led people to believe incorrectly that they had caught a bullet that was fired from a gun. So a lot of magicians will admit the fact that this is a magic act, that this is a bit of a subterfuge. It's the grifters and the con artists who tell you that they can communicate with your lost loved ones if you give them money, and then cold read you, which people have been cold read for centuries. So, you know, some people are presenting it as a form of entertainment and being paid to entertain you, and others are fooling you and trying to take your money. One should be commended, and the other should be arrested.
Well, you know, if it's fantasy, you know, like a picture can be not real in terms of the content within the frame of the picture, same with the sounds of music, lyrics of music, other creative presentations, you know, and I think that I hope people like the fantasy as it is and not to think that this is reality here and not to be sold into a situation where they're getting ripped off.
AC2GS. Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of being ripped off. I mean, all over the place. You know, I still do like rocks, geology, what have you. And you know, when spiritual quacks started to say that, you know, your chakra energy could be absorbed and transferred if you use this pink quartz rock. You know, the price of stones skyrocketed because there's a lot of people who unfortunately believe that nonsense. So there are a lot of people who have spent a lot of money on quack medical treatments, crystals and potions and water that was exposed to moonlight. You could go endlessly down a long, long list of BS products that people were promised all kinds of things. I mean, all you have to do is watch an Alex, forget his name, InfoWars type of thing. The guy apparently made hundreds of millions of dollars selling quack cures. So there's a lot of that going on, unfortunately. There's a lot of foolish people who take people at their word when they're liars.
And how does that relate to artificial intelligence? You know, there's a lot of quackery going on there.
Well, I don't know if I quite would call it quackery. It's financial grifting. It's a slightly different thing. It's hyping a product to increase its price because, you know, demand, supply, what have you. So if you keep saying these stupid things like AI is going to cure cancer, or AI is going to be plugged into a robot and the robot's going to be able to give everyone perfect operations, and you sell all your IBM stock and you invest it all in OpenAI or some such place, and that's a grift. Again, I don't think it's quite the same type of grift. It's a financial grift, which is very popular these days as well. Elon made his entire living grifting people. So, you know, it works.
I'll tell you honestly, Roy, I'm starting to get bored with all of that. You know, I think that it would be great if we could have something else to take the place of AI in some positive manifestation.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you could only kind of latch on to something that someone else has done. You can't start your own artificial intelligence algorithm that's different than generative transform and then offer it to the world. It just doesn't kind of work like that. You know, I mean, as far as AI, it'll either burn itself out, which it has in the past. People have terrible memories and are not very, very focused on the world. But, I mean, people have been talking about artificial intelligence for decades and predicting that they'd be perfected the next number of years. In the same way that we have these conversations about useful atomic fusion generation, that'll be available in 20 years and has been promised to be available in 20 years since the 60s. So, you know, and quantum computers, which have been promised to break encryption algorithms without any demonstration of that. I think they were able to factor the number 15 to 3 and 5, but you can probably get a 7-year-old to do that. You don't need a quantum computer. So there's a lot of things like that around, and unfortunately, instead of getting replacements for them, we'll just get additions to them, and there'll be other people throwing other dollars down the drain on other technologies that will ultimately never prove themselves. They sound sort of good, but they don't scale, or you know, water makes them dissolve, and so you have to kind of put them in a plastic envelope of some kind, and it never works out. You know, every week Wesley comes to us and tells us about research and development articles, and that's probably the last time we'll hear about them, because those people will simply lose it and get another one, and lose that and get another one, and lose that and get another one.
Well, maybe this will be possible in the future. Say some creative person has some kind of breakthrough. You know, they understand the language of the engineers. They can create something to take the place, something to take the place of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible. But I don't know of anyone who could legitimately tell you definitely it will happen, and certainly they won't be able to tell you when. You know, up until the day that Japanese engineer discovered how to manufacture blue LEDs, if you asked anyone in the field when a blue LED would be produced, they would shrug their shoulders and say, eventually. So that's the nature of discovery. You can't extrapolate curves and say, well, it took us X number of years to figure out how to vaccinate people for COVID. So let me plug it into an equation, and I'll tell you when something that doesn't have a vaccine yet will have a vaccine. Life doesn't work that way. It would be kind of simpler if it did, but it doesn't.
Well, what is the what if the artist creates something to take the place of artificial intelligence, because he understands what the art of artificial intelligence is missing. What it needs, it doesn't have.
Yeah, the problem is that usually people's expertise is not universal. And that's another problem that human beings tend to have. If you show some fool who has, you know, $300,000 billion, there are some people who think he's a genius, he knows everything, he can do everything. That isn't how things work. Artists, usually, if they're good artists, are good at creating things, creating new ideas in a certain field, in a certain area. If you get a famous musician, chances are, if you ask him to draw a great picture, he's not going to be able to, because just because he's great at music doesn't mean he's great at images. So, you know, people have their expertise. People have their bits of magic where they all of a sudden they understand some concept that they didn't before, and they have to teach it to everyone else because it sounds like the mutterings of a madman. But a lot of times they don't. It's just you have to crank it out bit by bit, and you go stepwise. And once again, you know, artificial intelligence presently is large language models, is a generative transform technology that's just really a glorified autocomplete algorithm. You give it the beginnings of a line of text, and it has to go through its training data for probability of what's the most likely completion of that thought. And that's not enough to produce new ideas. That only gives you the old ideas that you trained it for. So eventually someone might figure an algorithm where it actually fundamentally teaches the computer, but my guess is it's going to end up being a computer engineer, not an artist or a musician, simply because their skill sets are different. Yes, Wesley.
Yeah, we were talking about oxygen mask, and then I thought we went to the Azalea, you could buy every major sports franchise, fund hospitality in every state, or even purchase White House itself. And additionally, you could address social issues like poverty and education on a massive scale while still retaining significant wealth. And then the question is, if you don't mind to say a few words about it, where freedom to criticize Elon Musk reaches the limit? Is it when Elon Musk reaches its limit, and when it conflicts with laws against defamation, hate speech, or indictment of to violence, or money can close everybody, can shut up everybody. There is no longer freedom of speech, even though that is written. True or false? Back to you, Dr. Ray.
AC2GS. Honestly, it depends. I mean, again, just because you're filthy rich, and even if you have good intentions, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should do what you think you should do and that it's pretty much guaranteed to be useful. Bill Gates is a very wealthy guy. He's a relatively brilliant guy. His reputation got a hit recently, and I once said something that wasn't glowing about him, and some IT guy got really upset with me here on the tech comment, but you know, everyone is a fallible human being, and this includes Bill Gates. Bill Gates took a lot of his own money and put it into a charitable organization that affected the educational system, and his effect, unfortunately, was detrimental. And education took a hit because of his good intentions that had unforeseen results. So just because you're filthy rich and you're good at computers doesn't mean that you're good at education. And it's simple thought like that that gets people into trouble every day. So, again, I tend to think that it's probably best to have professional educators with experience and research and learning and understanding of the field that they should address issues. You might be able to pay the money to do that, but you shouldn't kind of get this attitude that you wrote BASIC for the Altair computer, and so it's your job to make sure every kid is educated the exact same way that you think you were. So, again, it depends.
Well, you know the story of Bill Gates in the 90s, Microsoft.
Yeah, let me first finish the last subject that I have, and then can continue the conversation. I have just one subject left. Not long, 5 minutes. How alpha particles can break the computer chips. And that was a story in '70s when all of a sudden a manufacturer of chips, Intel, noticed that for no reason they are faulting. And there was increased scrutiny of radioactive materials in semiconductor packaging. And they found out that the silicon that they use was from the area where there was the uranium deposits previously digged for. So there was a contamination. And my question is, if we have those smoke detectors that have alpha particles, because they found alpha particles even in very, very minuscule, very, very small presence, could break the chips. With those alpha particles from those smoke detectors from Americium-241 break the modern chips. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, number one, by the way, AC2GS. Number one, I don't think they really break the chips. What they do are flip the bits. So what happens is you're talking about the alpha decay. So alpha particles, if they strike the semiconductor, can change the bit state of the RAM. So it's flipping bits. It's not really just breaking them. Like you could just kind of reset them and they'll work. And the smoke detectors, they don't build them with americium anymore. But even if they did, alpha particles don't really last very long. They'll travel a couple of inches in air. A piece of paper blocks alpha particles. So the chances of an alpha particle hitting your RAM chips in your computer are negligible. Most of the time, when people kind of make the comment, they're talking about cosmic rays that go through a lot of things because they're just high energy particles and they'll decay among other things into things like alpha and flip the chip. So I don't think people have that much of a. I mean, there are a redundancy check for some forms of RAM memory that do that because of this problem that radiation can change the data a bit.
Okay, interesting. I agree with you. Yes, you said it's right. We're talking about beta. Beta could go through the paper, but alpha particles could be stopped by skin, by human skin. So as long as you don't have it, that's what happened to some Russian dissidents when a Russian put alpha particles into the tea or coffee. That was Litvinenko, the former spy, Russian spy, who ran to England and he was assassinated there. From other sources, that was Neptunium-237, 432.2 years of half-life, yeah. They also use that, and you're right, that they don't use those alpha particles in smoke detectors right now. It's a different word, which is good. But some people, I remember from the history, there was some guy who was trying to extract it from the smoke detectors, and he only damaged his organism, his health. Anyhow, thank you very much. That's everything for today. I do appreciate about your comment about Elon Musk. And Mike, back to you and to AJ.
Okay, very good, Wesley. I appreciate your participation. You know, long, long, long time ago, they had a lot of problems with, they used to paint illuminated watch handles with tritium. And unfortunately, the young women who had the job would wet their brushes with their mouth. So they'd introduce the tritium inside their body, and they developed cancer the skull bone started to just kind of dissolve. It was a terrible travesty. That's long before everyone figured out that the tritium was not safe to use in that manner. Anyway, thank you very much, Wesley. David, you asked me. I'm pretty much aware of Bill Gates in the 90s. He probably made one of the dumber predictions. He predicted that the internet was not really going to be that special.
No. Microsoft in the 90s with Bill Gates. Yeah, he used to hire people, you know, for big contracting jobs, programming and the like. And as part of a traditional activity, which he did many times, is, you know, he was able to pay the contractor one-third of what they agreed upon through court battles.
Okay, I wasn't aware that he did that. Some people, that's a good business. He keeps his money to himself.
Well, you're breaking up a little bit. He was a really tough businessman, and he played it tough, you know, rough and tough.
Yeah, yeah. Going back all the way, I mean, he pulled all kinds of things. One of the big things about Microsoft, you would say, was MS-DOS. Pretty much anyone involved in computers back then used to use MS-DOS. And yet, MS-DOS wasn't really written by anyone at Microsoft originally. It was licensed from a third party who basically made a clone of another disk operating system called CPM. So IBM went to Digital Corp and asked to buy a license to CPM, and the guy who ran it told them no. So they went to Bill Gates, and Bill Gates didn't have anything to offer them, but told them that he'd do it for them, and found that the guy who made the third-party version bought a endless license to it, and Microsoft was off to the races. So, you know, he made his original big name on someone else's product. And, you know, I'm sure he did all kinds of things. But that's what businessmen are. It's very difficult to be a moral. You usually got to step on at least a million people to get that billion out. So that's kind of why there's a lot of discussion of the philosophy and ethics of you know, should the civilization suffer billionaires? You know, when is having too much money too much?
I guess the question is, person has to have a device like a calculator or a slide rule to be able to measure, you know, the amount of wealth that they have, and then, you know, you really can't see it. You can't see it. There's no picture of it. Maybe unless you have stacks of gold bricks or paper money.
Yeah, that's not how wealth works. Wealth is very often not liquid. So it's the valuation of your possessions. You know, if you own IAX, Elon's artificial intelligence, and you could tell people its value is the price that you paid for the chips and building the data center, but in his case, he just kind of pulls it out of his backside, and that's where he got.